But do you think it's conceivable that the UK would be able to rejoin the EU without a referendum? I mean, would our partners or potential partners be satisfied by a decision purely by a government? Hello, I'm John Stevens. I'm the chair of the Federal Trust, and I'm talking once again to Brendan Donnelly, the director of the Federal Trust, about developments in the UK relating to Brexit. Brendan, there have been a number of quite intriguing developments for commenting on the current position of the UK in relation to whether it can rejoin the European Union at some stage. The first thing that caught my attention was the remark by Peter Mandelson saying that it was a joke to even contemplate the UK rejoining. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a Starmerite orthodoxy at the moment that you should talk as little as possible about Europe and even less about the possibility of rejoining. Mandelson wanted to associate himself with that orthodoxy. I think his contribution to the debate was to say that it's naive and unrealistic and exotically ludicrous even to talk about rejoining. Well, one of the arguments he put forward was that the EU isn't at all interested in the United Kingdom rejoining. It's interesting that there he's attempting to shift the responsibility to the other side rather than to the British side. I think it's untrue that the European Union is hostile or even indifferent to the idea of the United Kingdom rejoining. I think the EU would be very pleased if the United Kingdom wanted to rejoin. But the United Kingdom would have to understand that there's a lot of work to be done from the UK side in order to build up trust, which has been destroyed and wantonly thrown away over the past 8 years.
A lot of pro-Europeans in Britain are placing great hopes on a Labour government, which now seems highly likely, if not inevitable, following the next election. Do you feel that these remarks by Peter Mandelson reveal that those hopes may be misplaced?
I think there are barriers to those hopes being realised, which shouldn't be underestimated. And Mandelson's remarks are part of that rhetoric that the Labour Party is developing. Rachel Reeves recently talked about the way in which attempting to get closer to the European Union under a new Labour government would be disorienting and disruptive for British industry. It's part of the narrative that the Labour Party are trying to develop that they are the party of economic stability in contrast to the feckless Conservatives. Well, I think that what Reeves, who was never a great enthusiast for the European Union, is saying is the opposite of the truth. Brexit is, of its nature, a disruptive force. It's something which has trashed 50 years of economic and political stability for the United Kingdom within the European Union. And there are always going to be new manifestations coming forward of how Brexit is a disruptive force. It's only really when Brexit is reversed that stability will be restored to the British economy.
Do you think that economic events will force a Labour government, regardless of these remarks and this position, into a more pro-European posture?
I think that's entirely possible. I think that for a year or so, the government will be stuck with its present unenthusiastic, even soft Eurosceptic rhetoric. But then economic and political events may well force it to look for a new narrative, particularly if it hasn't been able to show the economic benefits and advantages that it's been claiming for itself in its next term in government. Europe might be an answer to the Labour maiden's prayer. It'll be politically difficult, but I think it's one of the great unresolved questions of present British politics. Will, halfway through its first term in office, the Labour Party pivot in a more pro-European direction? And I think it's entirely possible that that will happen. Not because at the moment Starmer or his close associates want it to happen, but because events may force them in that direction.
But these events you see as being primarily economic realities, the problem of finding growth, or are they wider political ones or geopolitical ones related to developments vis-a-vis Russia or the United States or
Yes, I think it's certainly true that if there were a Trump presidency, then that's something which objectively would force, both militarily and economically and politically, the United Kingdom much closer to the European Union. And quite a lot of these hesitations and Mandelsonian reticences would be overtaken by events, not just economic, as you say.
Of course, I suppose part of this picture will be what position the opposition to a Labour government takes towards the European Union following the next general election, particularly in circumstances in which the Conservatives suffer a very major defeat and go through a process of internal turmoil over their future position. And here we've had some intervention from a person perhaps as compromised reputationally on the Conservative side as Peter Mandelson has been on the Labour side, namely Michael Gove, in a recent interview. What do you make of his remarks?
I agree, it's very important for where the Labour Party ends up on Europe in a couple of years' time, what happens to the Conservative Party over the next couple of years. I think it's entirely possible that they'll suffer a crushing defeat and that the party will then split, a part of it associating itself with reform, and a middle ground, which may attempt to form a regional party, say in the southeast, say in London, or may come to be associated with the Liberal Democrats. If that's so, then it might be easier for the Labour Party to move in a more pro-EU direction. But the remarks from Gove were quite extraordinary. We now find that he was never particularly in favour of a referendum anyway. He thought it might be divisive. And courageously, he's admitted that the person who took the decision was David Cameron, and he was against it at the time. Learning through suffering is what the Greek tragedians used to talk about. Well, the learning is Gove's because he says that no future prime minister should ever engage in a referendum on a controversial subject. But the suffering, I'm afraid, is the UK's. It may be when he says in this interview that he was never agitating for the United Kingdom to leave the European Union, although he was a Eurosceptic, he's carrying out the first very tentative steps in distancing himself from Brexit. That may be an interesting straw in the wind.
I mean, it's not clear, though, that what Gove is telling us is actually the truth of the matter, because he was always a very convinced Brexiteer, and he knew that the only way in which Cameron could would deliver Brexit in any form would be by calling a referendum.
Well,
And
but
he
not
encouraged Cameron to call a referendum by saying that he would support him in the event of that referendum in favour of the Remain cause, which he then did the opposite.
well, the present position of Michael Gove is that referendums are a very bad way to settle major political questions. He thinks that governments should have a commitment in a manifesto to carry something out, and if they then win an election, they're entitled to do so. Presumably, if in 2029 the Labour Party advocated rejoining the European Union or holding or in its manifesto, he'd go along with that and find that perfectly acceptable that the Labour government should take us back into the European Union after winning an election victory.
But do you think it's conceivable that the UK would be able to rejoin the EU without a referendum? I mean, would our partners or potential partners be satisfied by a decision purely by a government?
That's a very, very reasonable question. At the moment, these things are so much in the realm of speculation that you can only look at possibilities. It might well be that one of the things that our partners would want convincing about is the solidity of the decision to re-enter the European Union, and that might take time. But it's not going to happen unless you have political leaders advocating for that rejoin position. One of the dishonest things which is sometimes said, not just by Labour, but by other supposedly pro-EU parties, is that nobody's talking about rejoining. Well, the reason why nobody's talking about rejoining, other than when they're asked in opinion polls, is that their political leaders are so mealy-mouthed on the subject, so reluctant to advocate the obvious solution to the problems that Brexit causes.
The reason why our partners might wish to see a referendum is because clearly they would require the assurance that there is support right across the political spectrum from left to right in favour of rejoining. And so, therefore, the position taken by the Conservative Party, if it's remade following this election, it becomes very important. We've seen some indications that Conservatives could be considering a total reversal of position on the EU. I mean, we've had an article, for example, in the Daily Telegraph by one of their leader writers advocating a rethink along these lines. Is this just a sort of a flash in the pan, or a bit of clickbait, or does it indicate the possibility that among conservative opinion, there could be a reversal of thinking on our membership of the EU?
I think the question is not just how the Conservative Party positions itself on Europe over the next 5 years, but the question of how big and how significant a political force that Conservative Party is. Because if it's true that a proportion of the present Conservative Party, which finds, by the way, Rishi Sunak too left-wing, we know from opinion polling, allies itself with the Reform Party, then that might be a party which would score 20, 22, 23% in the polls. But it would run the risk of being electorally insignificant under our first-past-the-post system. So we have to ask ourselves not merely where the Conservative Party will stand, but how important it will be in the possibly remade framework of British politics in the next 5 or 6 years. As far as the article was concerned, it was a surprise, but I don't think it reflects yet any significant change in general orthodox conservative opinion. The argument that was being made was rather a niche one. It was the one that said that since the government and political opinion in the United Kingdom wasn't prepared to accept a deregulated post-Brexit Britain, then it made sense to go back to the warm embrace of the European Union. Some of this was said tongue in cheek, but it did reflect what we've discussed before, that one part of the Brexit coalition was the Singapore on Thames folks, as they say, the MAGA folks, the people who thought that the way to take advantage of leaving the European Union was to introduce a radical program of deregulation and privatization. Now, that was never politically saleable to the United Kingdom, and it's the reason why these people were kept under wraps during the referendum period. I think that they have realised, or many of them have realised, that it's politically a non-starter in the United Kingdom. And some of them draw the conclusion, or may draw the conclusion, that a return to the European Union is invisible if it's not going to lead, if Brexit is not going to lead to this deregulation that they want. I think there may have been another agenda at work behind this particular article. There may have been the invitation to some people to consider, if you want to save Brexit, you've got to go down the deregulatory path. And perhaps that might be the beginnings of an argument for saying that a Truss too, or someone like Liz Truss, ought to be the next leader of the Conservative Party.
There were two pillars, I suppose, of the right wing's so-called right wing case for Brexit. And one was deregulation, one was imitating essentially the economy of the United States far more than the European models. And the other was opposition to immigration. Of course, these two don't entirely mesh with each other. And that was one of the problems underlying the failure of the current Conservative government. But is it conceivable that either or both of these pillars could be transformed into a European direction? I mean, if one wants an economy comparable to that of the United States, you need economies of continental scale. And that's only really feasible within a much more integrated European Union market. And that's certainly what the right in continental Europe is now increasingly moving towards, away from its opposition to European integration in favor of a form of European integration that would be essentially on a right-wing agenda. And immigration, too, because it raises issues of identity, could also conceivably take a European turn, could it not? Because After all, there is the question of to what extent this idea of global Britain, as opposed to European Britain, reflected in current patterns of immigration, is actually really what the people who voted for Brexit on the basis of opposition to immigration were really calling for.
I think you're quite right that there's a failure to mesh together of those two elements of the Brexit coalition. And what I've always found particularly ironic was that Mrs. Thatcher was very much in favour of the single market as a deregulatory mechanism, which on the whole it was very substantially. There were some elements of sovereignty sharing which she didn't like, and that's why she took again the single market. But I can see the entire logic of those in the on the continent, and perhaps increasingly in the Conservative Party, who think that the authentic deregulatory agenda can best be pursued at the European level. And of course, migration within the European Union, a free market in labour, is an important component of that. I think it's very incipient and ill-formed at the moment, this thinking within the Conservative Party. But we may look back in a few years' time and say that this particular article was a precursor of a wider reassessment of the way in which perhaps a market liberal Conservative Party, one interested in European identity, can find its home within the European Union.
But in the meantime, we're faced with the extraordinary situation that talking about Brexit, and let alone talking about any possibility of reversing Brexit, is a total taboo in British politics, right across the spectrum. We have a general election coming in which the debate about the deepest issues which face the country is actually excluded. And I'm reminded of a commentary made on the decline of the Spanish Empire in the 18th century, that it was observed by the Marquis de Pombal, who was the Portuguese statesman, that all problems that were really serious had become impossible to discuss, and that this was a mark of a decadent society. One feels that that observation is becoming relevant for the UK, sadly.
It couldn't be an objection hurled at the Federal Trust and ourselves. We spend a great deal of time talking about Brexit, but I think it's important that people like ourselves, who do think Brexit and its reversal is important, should not be deterred by sneers from Peter Mandelson. I'm rather encouraged by the fact that the debate in this country is so confused and so murky on Brexit. There are so many cross currents in it. I think it's entirely possible that in 2 or 3 years the clouds will lift and there'll be a much more straightforward and realistic view of the disaster that Brexit is and the way in which it needs to be reversed. 8 years after the referendum, there's no sort of possible consensus emerging. And it's my view that it's only when at least we make moves towards the single market and the customs union that instability can be in some way mitigated. Ironically, one of the things I agree with Cheryl Jacobs about is that at the halfway house of simply being in the single market and the customs union is perhaps impossible factually to achieve, and certainly a politically unsustainable halfway house. In for a penny, in for a euro would be my motto, and I hope that's the consensus that will emerge in 2 or 3 years' time.
Brendan, thank you very much for this. The Federal Trust will go on and actually debating these matters if no one else is at the moment. I hope you enjoyed this video and will follow our other work on the same topic. Thank you.